Why these games?
Why these games? Well, the play's the thing. And I'm surprised you have to ask when your human Shakespeare explained it all so well.
So he did, but don't depend too much on any one single
viewpoint.
It's a
pity you don't know the content of your own library. Hear this, Picard, and reflect. All the galaxy is a stage.
World, not galaxy. All the world's a stage.
Oh, you know that one. Well, if he were living now, he would have said galaxy. How about this? Life is but a walking shadow. A poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing.
I see. So how we respond to a game tells you more about us than our real life. This tale told by an idiot. Interesting cue.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Perhaps maybe a little Hamlet?
Oh, no, I know Hamlet. And what he might say with irony, I say with conviction. What a piece of work is man. How noble in reason, how infinite in faculty, in form, in moving, how express and admirable, in action, how like an angel, in apprehension, how like a god.
Surely you don't see your species like that, do you?
I see us one day becoming that, Q. Is it that which concerns you?
But what I was going to say is, though, yeah, you already mentioned that the quintessence, you said when you Googled it, it came up as judge or whatever. So, I mean, the whole reason why the quintessence created the robots to begin with was for entertainment purposes and for creative thinking exercise, I guess, because all they do is calculate probability of outcome. And that's all they're interested in. Is sort of like gambling against one another. So like in the original animated movie, it's like they switch faces and each face has a different, like it rotates around. And so one will say like 28% probability that this Autobot will survive this Sharktacon attack. And then they'll switch and like go to another one and say, well, this influence has influenced that. So they're kind of, again, that cue, that all-seeing, all-knowing being that is calculating the entirety of the odds of like all time and all space kind of thing. And what's really lovely is that whenever, because at the end of each episode of the cartoons, they always do like a character highlight. And so whenever they talk about the quintessence, they're like the five faced creature, including the face of death. And they always highlight death as the face that to like pay attention to. And I think that that's really fun too, because like from the lectures I heard from Terrence McKenna, he was talking about, you know, like the ways that you can experience that sort of DMT trip in a natural state is obviously through dreaming, but also people talk about it as a near-death experience that you can tap into as well.
Right. Yeah. There's people that have near-death experiences that actually are not near death at all. They're just in a very intense situation that induces this kind of, again, shamanic experience is all it is. But I mean, mm-hmm. I mean that, not to reduce it or to trivialize it, it's important and it's super complex. But I mean, when I say that's all it is, I mean, that's what it is.
So, I know what you mean. Yeah, it is what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's definitely got, it definitely resonates with my, we're just saying the same thing in different language almost.
Exactly.
I don't write too much about the connection between like, you know, it's hard to argue the existence of extra-dimensional beings. I do like ghost researchers, and I think there is some relevance to that work. I don't think it's all kooky or crazy. Mm-hmm. Now, at the same time, it's like, I don't know exactly who's faking what, but I'm a faithful person sometimes. I think we all have to give ourselves over to a certain amount of faith that people are acting in good faith. Not all the time. Like, it depends. It's that fine line that you walk in believing or taking people for their word. But, you know, I think those ideas are these are interesting ideas and moving forward as a culture and society. It's like they're worth exploring. It's like, what is that interface between mind and like that extra dimension? What is the extra dimension? Is it real? What is it? So that's interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, what I was thinking about was that whole like, that whole P before Q thought of, so what if all of the interdimensional self-transforming machine elves is just sort of like a future reflection, you know? Because I don't know, It's like I tend to see like the problems arise whenever you externalize things. So like externalize
and project.
And like try to make it something
other. You
see
it all the time.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I had this really beautiful moment where we were in Champagne, France, and we were drinking champagne out in the courtyard in front of one of these really beautiful, like, Gothic cathedrals. And I was just laying on the floor, staring up at the outside of it, you know, trying to sort of look at all the little gargoyles and all the details. And aesthetically, it was just gorgeous. But it was just, like, I had this, like, laugh out loud moment where it was like, so much effort is put into externalizing the divinity and the beauty that we have inside of ourselves. And that happens again and again and again. And it's kind of that note, John, when we were talking about like people needing a pacifier, it's like you need to externalize the thing so that you can soothe yourself with it. And it's really weird. Like, I don't know, I'm kind of on a like integration trip right now. I'm like, how much can I integrate in and sort of recognize is within me? Which is really narcissistic, but...
No, I mean, we all have to like define our boundaries. Like everyone's different. So as unique people and unique creatures, we need to define our own boundaries in our own ways. And so no one's ever going to come to the same conclusions. That would be insane. So yeah, I think that's part important part of the process. And I think Alan especially has like walked that line better than anybody in the sync community. And he's the most articulate about how he's gone about it and like qualifying everything he says, you know, when it gets, you know, I don't know. I really respect Ellen's.
I sometimes get criticized for overqualifying, like pausing a conversation, like, hey, we're not white supremacists, but.
No, it's important.
It's important. It's important to me.
I think especially, and that's really good, because that. I think it's really good because you're acknowledging that not everyone is necessarily thinking the same along the same lines, which is great because that encourages participation and inclusion, you know.
And like learning how to talk to other people, which is actually rather difficult. Like most people
communication.
Do not know how to do that. Yeah.
It's the hardest. It is so hard. I mean, yeah, even with people that you're insanely close to, it's like communication is a constant thing.
I still don't know how to do it to most of the people in my life, you know? It's really tricky.
I completely agree with you. And then it's like at the same time when you're on these sort of personal journeys of, you know, all the things we've been talking about, like not having any prejudgment and breaking down walls and learning that one thing can have 100 different meanings and stuff. It's like, it's almost just like exhausting to think about speaking or expressing. For me, sometimes I'm just like, why does all this effort have to be had? It seems so crazy and so expansive and really, really hard. So then it gets more complicated because you're like, what does that word mean? And what is your frame of reference that you're talking about in relation to my frame of reference? And what's all the baggage that I'm taking with this? And do you have baggage that you're taking with it? Or, you know, that whole thing.
We're all in relationships. And, you know, it's like, this was something, I stopped in Idaho and I saw Jason Barrera and he was talking about how he felt like even people within the sync community didn't get him, you know? And I said, you know, I was like, dude, it's like, I love my wife very much. I assume she loves me very much, you know? And it's like, we have misunderstandings all the fucking time. And there's probably no one on this planet that it should be easier for me to speak to, you know? It's like the level of intimacy and whatever. So I think that's what we're, in a lot of ways, I think what we're doing here is accepting that we're human beings and we're always going to have misunderstandings. We're always going to, like you said, that word has 5 different meanings. And when you use it, I might think you're using meaning number 4 and react to meaning number 4 or et cetera. At the same time, like when we get into really complicated conversations, how much easier is it to get misunderstood? And I'm just happy that we're trying. Like the fact that we can do these long conversations and try. That's great.
It's beautiful. Yay for humans trying. yay us. Let's pat ourselves on the back. But it's really, it's really interesting too, because then it's like, it's not even just meaning, but it's like you also have to sort of judge like how much ego or personal things people are attaching to what they're saying. Like a lot of time, like I'm in the process right now of trying to emotionally detach myself from things, which maybe doesn't sound all that healthy, but in a way that's just meant to not take anything personally, or like, what, I don't know. Does that make any sense?
So I try to
present things without like a emotional personal attachment, just like, oh, this is a thought. And so I find that sometimes too in like intellectual conversations or conversations like this, that intention sometimes gets taken for granted, or like you never really know where that's coming from. It's hard too when you're like strangers and you haven't really spent any amount of time besides sharing voice, sound waves, and thoughts, you know? Like I know, for instance, using that example of like a personal relationship, it's like, yeah, all of the time that Andy and I ever fight is because we're miscommunicating about exactly the same thing. Like, we're never on opposite sides of the fence.
Right.
That's why we're lovers and have been in love for so long. It's like, we're on the same page. We're on the same team. Where is the miscommunication coming from? And that is a really valuable lesson that I try to apply to like all situations and talking to strangers too. It's like, I try like coming at it from a perspective of like, let's assume we're on the same page, kind of almost allows you to ignore the things that would normally piss you off if someone says, like if they say something racist or if they say something like just completely out of the blue or whatever, and you normally that would cause like a personal reaction. You're just kind of like, well, I'm just going to continue searching for the gold amongst like, what is it that we're trying to get at here together?
And
it's sort of a diplomatic way of engaging with the outside world. You know, like, for instance, if I'm talking with people who are, like, using sexist language or whatever, like, I consider myself a feminist, obviously. Everyone should. So, you know, like, I can't walk outside and be offended all the time by things that are sexist or not feminist, because then I would just be irritated all
especially
of the
since
time.
The entire world, what you live in is a sexist society. So
yeah, like it would be ridiculous. So in some sense, you have to sort of just.
But okay, can we go there? Let's try and do this, because this has been something I don't really want to take. There's so much more I want to talk to you about, but I want to kind of hit this point. Right. Mm-hmm. The conversation that kept coming up throughout the course of my interacting with people over the last month was this sort of conversation. I don't know if you were ever a fan of Red Ice Creations. It's an online radio that I've been hugely inspired by and proud of for many years. And now I went from being inspired and proud of them, and I mean proud to be on the show, to being like, what the fuck is happening over there? And it seems like they've gone in some sort of, you know, really weird racist. I mean, it's like I can't really.
They sidestepped.
Yeah, like it's something else altogether. And I guess what as someone who's defended. You know, I believe strongly that no one should be censored and that they should be able to say whatever shit they want. And at the same time, so this is where I want to go, because I want you to tell me where I'm wrong or where my blind spot is I'm trying very hard without judgment, but at the same time to not censor myself either, and to go like, hey, you have the right to say whatever you want, and I also have the right to say whatever I want, which is, I think you're a racist cocksucker. Like,
yeah.
I think that you're able to say that. So how do you find that balance? And I'm curious, how do you keep judgment out of that? Or what's your take on that?
I mean, I guess I'm really fortunate in that I don't often find myself engaging directly with people that are that in that much opposition to my own sort of principles. So I don't know how to answer that. That would be a personal thing, like just a personal decision that you would have to make to either like voice up and say that. I don't think it would be wrong of you to state that. I mean, I always kind of question everything I do is like, well, what do I want to get out of this?
Oh, yeah, no, okay, that's interesting. Yeah, like, I don't,
Are you asking, I mean, like, I'm not a moral absolutist, so I right. totally, as we've just been talking about, I totally believe that you can have valuable, relevant, useful things come out of horrible places.
As do I. Seriously, yeah. I've been, and that's been one of the hardest things for me to convey, I think, over, I've gotten a lot of pushback for defending that. At the same time, what I'm saying is, I think...
Oh, I see. Like, drawing the line between advocating and...
Yeah, to say...
Just still...
Yeah, exactly. It's like, hey,
well, I mean,
I think there is gold to be found in that trash. At the same time... Let's establish that I think it's trash. Like, I don't know, it's really hard for me. It's something I struggle with regularly. So.
Yeah, I mean, like, is there something uniquely relevant that you're finding through that specific outlet that you feel like you need to sort of encourage people to still pay attention and engage with? Or is it something that can also be found elsewhere?
Right.
Because there is relevance in, like, moving on, like, finding what you needed and then kind of moving on from there.
Like, I think Red Ice is almost irreplaceable, though. That's what
really?
Sucks so hard about it. Yeah. Mm. I mean, like, if you actually looked at how many shows he's done over the years and the subjects he's gotten into and the people he's given exposure to, it's amazing. And really, like, on the pantheon of alternative podcasters, I can't think of anyone above him. Now, at the same time, recently it's devolved into like, yeah, really kind of like, what the fuck is this? kind of, you know, I understand questioning and whatnot, and that's really important. But, you know, when we start getting into questions of Zionism and how do I push back against Zionism? Do I just argue that historical revisionism and say like, you know, half the Holocaust didn't happen, so only 3 million Jews got killed? It's like, what the fuck's the difference? It's still 3 million people getting torched to death. It's like, why are you arguing that point? And that's like a lot of
exactly
that alternative history that I think is like, what the hell? It's not even like relevant. So yes, it's revelatory in a sense, but it's also not.
Yeah.
It's a trap. It's like, I feel like they're stuck in a trap now. And I'm like, oh no. Now, at the same time, like, what Alan's saying is like, why can't we say, oh, this is like, ugh. But there's something there. And so I look at their archives. If anyone has not looked at them, go to their archives, just ignore the last like 6 months of the show. And go to the archives because there's some like really cool stuff there. And I still
I've never listened to the show, so I don't know.
I think it would trip you out. Like,
you guys...
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can just look through it and there's all kinds of weird shit that they get into. I don't think there's a subject that he hasn't covered. It's pretty mind-blowing, actually. And he can speak intelligently on, like, everything. Something
that,
I strive to.
That,
you know?
Even this, what we're talking about, this idea of, like, finding the value in anything, was, I feel, in a lot of ways, I was inspired to that end by them. By the fact that I never could tell where they stood, because they really did feature a little bit of everything. And I was like, okay, he's really... just non-judgmentally, very objectively, giving people a platform to put their information out, whether he agrees with it or not. And that was super inspiring. And but the funny thing is I always wondered, I was like, wow, this guy's listened to so many brilliant people talk. I wonder what he thinks. And now I'm like, oh, I think I know what he thinks, and I really don't like it.
like his
true colors are showing, and you're just kind of like, oh, it's tainting the information that's coming out of your mouth.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you can't expect. Oh, I was just gonna say, I feel like sometimes when I say these things, it sounds really flippant, and I get self-conscious about it. But again, it just kind of goes back to you can't expect everyone to be perfect, and that is not at all. Like,
it's not an excuse.
A celebration of the behavior or an excuse at all. I'm just saying that it, like, I personally, like, while it can be disappointing, it's like, okay, I also always assume that everyone has faults and has personal bias that I might not agree with or is completely retarded for the way that the world actually is, which racism is retarded. So,
and context is like so important to understand people's state.
Yeah.
Where they're coming. Yeah. You know, and like the guy we're talking about, Henrik, he's from Sweden, and you know, heavy on socialism. And,
yeah,
it is conformist. The things he says about it aren't wrong, but at the same time, the things I say about it aren't wrong. It does take care of its citizens. It does, like, you know, people are healthy. It's like, yeah, they're probably killing themselves because they're so depressed about how everyone's standardized. But at the same time, it's like, you know, if you have your needs met, it's on you to be creative. I don't know, man. I'd rather be secure and feel kind of vapid than like be scraping for an existence and then trying to be creative. Or, you know, I don't know. But that's neither here nor there. But at the same time, it's like, that's kind of where he's coming from. And so, you know, the ideas he comes at it from, and like, he's very libertarian, and I get that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something to libertarianism. That there's also
an
absolutely ridiculous side to libertarianism that makes no sense. So
absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, the hard, you know, those are the rough waters that we're traversing when we engage in this kind of dialogue, is that there is actually probably something to be found in everything, you know? Like, if you can flip your face and see it from someone else's point of view, you can probably find a way to nod your head in agreement, and that all needs to be, like, put into perspective, you know? As well, like, personally, like, you can't take everything with you. You can't find value in everything. There's no, all those things.
That's crazy. You can't be an expert in everything. And so, like what Alan said about synchronicity being kind of a melting pot and a big tent, it's true. It's like, it's very non-hierarchical, and it's just, there's people that other people organize about, but that's how self-organizing systems work. Doesn't mean they're like hierarchical. It just means there's people that do different things, and they all interact in different ways, and everyone, you know, kind of gravitates organically to what they feel is they're comfortable with.
Yeah.
That's what I like about this community generally. And so I don't come at it in the same way as a lot of people. But the way you're delving into this subject is actually, I think, very understandable and like super obvious to me. And I love the work of other people in pop culture. And a lot of it has a lot to say. It's sometimes, though, it can be opaque, and it's like not easy for people to get into necessarily.
Yeah.
And I didn't get at it through that angle either, like Alan said. I mean, I didn't get into that through a pop culture. I had a similar sentiment. It's like, I don't want to watch all these fucking movies. It's like, I got a lot to read and this and that and other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I have work to do. And like, one of the hardest things about finding myself so excited about synchronicity and going to the Zinc Summit and all those things is it's exactly the same creative energy that I use for work. So it can be exhausting when I wake up one morning and all I want to do is follow my trail of thought instead of get to work and make something. And it's literally like, I can try to force myself to stand there and like cut and sew this fabric, but all of the creative problem-solving energy that I need in order to do that flawlessly is just kind of used up when I'm focusing on this kind of stuff too. So, yeah, it gets a little overwhelming. And at some point I was like, I think at the beginning I was like, I'm doing this backwards. It's like, I don't have any of the like root knowledge. Like, I don't have deep knowledge of numerology or occult, esoteric kind of stuff. But in a way, that was kind of what was most interesting to me, is because I was still seeing things like pop out, and then I would go and investigate it. Like, why am I seeing 22s everywhere, and what's with this beetle thing? And then, you know, and then I follow that back, and you guys are like a wealth of knowledge, and it's like, oh, Crowley and McKenna and all of these kinds of things. You know what I mean? So it's like, I feel like I'm kind of doing it backwards.
I think that's cool. And there, you know, where synchronicity is non-linear, right?
Yeah.
So it's sort of
exactly. And it's funny because John, you and I were just talking about this in reference to creatively the way that I experience synchronicity. It's very, almost feels like a precognition of things, like when I have. Like vision, I mean, they just come to me like in complete, already finished things, which is like images in my head. So if I'm present, it's all problem solving. So if a client comes to me and says, I want to do a contemporary dance that's inspired by like me being a cosmic cloud that is like the essence of a serpent goddess. And I'm like, okay, great. How do I, my problem is now to turn these really like, to turn that into something like physical and representative of that essence. So how do I do that? Where do you even begin with a thing like that? Like, I don't, you know, you can't break it down like that. But then what ends up happening is I just think about it, and then it literally just comes to me. Like, an idea will fully form in my head. And, like, it's contrary to all of what you ever learn in design school about your first idea is not your best. Like, you need to work forward from there. It's usually opposite for me. It's like this, I mean, obviously I tweak it and evolve it and stuff, but it's usually my first intuition is the best and most well-rounded. And I have a really hard time sometimes when I'm not like necessarily inspired by a particular concept, because if I don't have that initial flash of thing, then I really feel like I'm feeling around in the dark. Like, okay, I have to be really derivative in the sense that I like maybe need to Google and like look at how other people have interpreted this, or and like kind of work that way instead of working from just like a fully finished idea that's already in my head. So I was saying to you that it sometimes feels like I've been here before and I've done these things before, which I don't know why I started talking about. You were talking about nonlinear ways of.
Yeah. I was talking a little, I bring up chaos theory now and then, and I just kind of addressing that kind of mode of thinking where you can kind of, I don't think time perfectly loops or anything. Like there's no, we're not living the exact same moment. I think there's endless novelty. That's kind of like the charm of the universe, is that it's never the same. But
yeah,
certain instances kind of come close, and you know, there might be something in reincarnation. I play with that idea. So you could be living the same life, but coinciding with the moment, but not exactly overlapping. So you get these weird moments of like, oh, a past life or a future moment that has sort of happened but not, or has happened but has not. So there's actual like physical systems that kind of do this, but we don't know how those physical systems experience that dynamic. But we could say experiencing that dynamic is this. We could say that's the dynamic and this is the experience.
So I love that you brought that up. Can I tell you guys about the like one really visionary, awesome perspective shifting dream that I had this year, earlier this year?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Okay. So, this happened like earlier this year. So pre-finding McKenna and all of these things, which it ties into, which is really beautiful. But, so I'm having this dream where I'm in a hotel and I'm going from room to room, and inside each room, there's people working on a problem, and it's like really intense. The people are very absorbed in solving the problem. And each room, I realize that it's like a slight variation on the same problem that everyone's working on. And so I'm collecting a little bit more of the answer as I go from room to room. But I realize that there's no possible way I can be in all rooms at the same time to help people figure it out before the clock runs out or whatever. So as I have that revelation, I'm like in the hallways of this hotel, and I sort of just like end up beaming back to what is apparently my hotel room, and it's all like the only thing in it is like these red curtains covering an entire wall, and like a clock, which I can hear, and a deck of cards, which only has red cards. And so I'm sitting there playing solitaire with myself, just kind of like thinking over these things. And the dream has gone, I get a sense that it's gone from like dream time to actual real time. So I'm sitting there in what feels like real time playing solitaire with myself. And I get bored after a couple of hours, and I stand up and I just say out loud, like, okay, I figured it out. I'm ready to like get out of this room. And so I go to the curtains and I pull them open, and it's a mirror, and I'm just like staring at myself. But I get this sense that there's something beyond the mirror, that there's people watching me. Or not people, just like beings, whatever. And so I like tap on the mirror, like, okay, I'm ready for you to turn the light on so I can see through this mirror. And it just ripples and nothing really happens. And so I step back, sort of looking at the ripple, and then an intercom comes on, and all I hear is a voice say, pray for peace in life. And I turn to the intercom and I go to repeat the words out loud, pray for peace in life. But the words come like forcefully out of my mouth, like my entire chest compresses. And I'm feeling this like it's real life, like all of the air is being vacuum sucked out of my lungs. And the words come out sort of like a tune. And I can't sing it all, so I don't remember the melody. Otherwise, I'd sing it for you. But they come out as like this melody drifting out of my lungs, and then I fall back in slow motion and die. And then I shot up in bed and like in real life, and my heart was pounding and racing, and I was like, what the fuck was that about? Like, that was the most intense dream I've ever had in my life. And like, I've always been able to sort of recall my dreams really well, but that was particularly vivid. Like, I was feeling all the chest compression and all of the things that were going on. And so I shot up and I was just like shaking. And the very first thought that came into my head was this conversation that I had with this woman like 2 years ago, where there's a necklace I always wear, and I made it, and it's like peace, it's turquoise peace signs with death heads. And I remember she just like, it wasn't someone I knew, but she had grabbed it and sort of was holding it and then looked at me and was like, well, that doesn't make much sense. And I remember looking at her thinking, that doesn't make much sense that you said that, because, I mean, rest in peace, that's a thing that people say quite frequently. And at the time, I was sort of a very non-believer in any kind of life after death type of, you know, reincarnation or whatever, didn't believe in any of that. So I was just kind of like, well, we rest when we die. So that seems really obvious to me. But anyway, so that was the conversation that popped into my head as the very first thought after having this dream. And it was just like this bone shaking sort of revelation that I was like, oh, I kind of feel not like reincarnation is a thing, but like, I had this weird sense and thought that like on an energetic level, your vibrations, it's like you can almost like imprint with some kind of like signature or something, and that maybe that is like a universal thing, like across dimensions or something like that. So I wasn't thinking about it in terms of like reincarnation, but just like your energy. And then I had this thought that's like, okay, what if every time you die, your energy just, because, you know, like, I don't know a lot about science, but like you hear the whole thing about like no energy can be created or killed, it just like exists and moves, transfers or whatever, transforms.
Yeah, conservation out of energy, right? Can't be created out of nothing.
Yes. So I was like, it made perfect sense to me that your energy would carry some kind of signature. And I thought maybe like when you physically die, your energy goes and sort of attaches to its most similar signature in another dimension, and that maybe that's kind of like what epiphany is. And I was like, for days, just thinking about like, what if every time I have a mind fuck, like an epiphany, it's some other dimension's me dying, and I'm integrating that life lesson and sort of like leveling up in this weird like video game version of like Power Misty. You know what I mean? Like,
okay,
a more powerful version of myself.
Well,
so that's kind of been my. That's been my like headspace for the past like 4 months. And then when I heard McKenna, and he even in his thing, sorry, I'll just say this last thing and then I'll let you go.
No problem.
In one of his lectures, he was talking about this like South American surrealist writer or something that was talking about DMT and like said something to the effect of like, you do it in the thresholds of buildings in the moonlight kind of thing. And I was like, yeah, the dream. I was like, wow, my dream. I was in a hotel in the thresholds, literally looking at people trying to solve problems. And the whole idea that there was a sense behind the sort of like wobbly reflection, which my reality with synchronicity now has become very wobbly. Like my thoughts, it feels like reality is bending around my thoughts in a lot of ways. So it was just a really prophetic, amazing dream.
You might not know much science, but like one of the popular notions is that information, this thing, this physical thing that there's arguments over exactly what it is, and it's complex, but this idea that information is embedded into the background of space and that the universe has a certain amount of information that is constantly transformed into new things. That's the basic presence of science.
I love that idea.
And that coincides with the holographic principle, which is that you can imprint images, you know, memories, if you will, onto through what is light interference in our reality, but at a deeper reality, it's just stuff bouncing into each other and creating stable patterns, and then it stays there. And it persists. And then we also know that reality is non-local, so everything's connected. So no matter how far away or whatever level you left an imprint, you have an opportunity to react with it. So there's a book called Science in the Akashic Field that you have to read that is just verbatim what you just said. Only in
the lab. Oh, my God.
So I'll send you a link to that stuff.
But okay, yes, please.
That's really cool. So.
This is my favorite part about engaging with you guys, and especially after Sync Summit, it was like I had a list of notes. It's like school of life. I was like, yay, now I have all of the things that I can look into and sort of investigate, which is so much fun. I appreciate that. Yeah, it would be great. I'd love to read it.
It's reality is bottomless, so you have to be careful about like how much you get into anything. Like you said, you can only do so much as a person. So it's interesting, and it should complement what we already do.
We need you to keep creating awesome art, so don't let this distract you.
Yeah, I know. It's funny. One of my best friends, who's also one of my best clients, she said the same thing. She's like, don't leave the glitter tribe. We still need you. I'm like, no, I'm not going anywhere. Obviously, it's like last year when I first started the process of sort of like breaking down all these boundaries, I really did have a moment where I was just like not wanting to do anything. And I was like, well, I could very easily retire to the top of a mountain and just sit there and think that would be happy. But yeah, it's not my reality. And
it's not embodied either. It's not, I mean, I think there's what I've been noticing over the last few years is with a lot of artists that we engage with, and some of them are more focused than others. And I think the people who I see are really using this in a productive way are people who are able to integrate it and say, oh, okay, this is a really interesting idea. How do I utilize this? But stay focused, stay creative. It should never be a distraction. And I know I'm the last one to talk, but...
No, I completely agree, but it's like... And I think, again, it goes back to that me having the feeling like I'm doing everything backwards, is that if I didn't already have a very strong root, if I didn't already have very strong roots in the burlesque community and a passion for what I did on the artistic side, I could definitely see how this would like lead me astray. But I'm already connected, so it's just become another part of it, which I feel really grateful that, I mean, I'm thinking more and more that everything falls into my lap exactly when it needs to. So I don't think it's a coincidence that I found... Yeah, for sure.
I'm curious. So, Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
Right, you've heard, and unfortunately David's not here, he could have given a much better spiel, but obviously Lady Gaga is, in no doubt, she incorporates imagery of Metropolis.
Yeah.
Right, and we have this sort of female robot. We have the idea of, you know, her basically, there's a ton of things, like, right, her name is Hel, you sort of being in Hel, Norway. You know, there's the idea of her being the Shekinah, the handmaid, and all these sort of esoteric concepts. But just what I can't get out of my mind is basically she transforms into the robot in front of the pentagram, which is your quintessence.
Right.
Right? And you incorporate into your Magical Queendom show the triple moon goddess symbol of, like, Hecate or any of these triple goddesses, along with the Mickey Mouse ears and the pentagram. Can you talk to that at all?
Well, that was that's a really great example of something coming to me as a fully formed vision that I just feel compelled to do, and then have time to sit and meditate and reflect on afterwards. So I can't honestly say that was just like, it seemed really, I wanted to, let's see. Okay. The inspiration just came as a result of like seeing some street art in Norway, Oslo. Everything is magical there. And so it was like, it was the street art of this girl who was smoking a cigarette with like a short pixie haircut. And the only word on it down below was the word Alice. And I assume it was probably the artist's name or whatever, but it just kind of got me thinking about like, what Alice would be if she had grown up and sort of really started to meditate seriously on all of her adventures in Wonderland. And, then later on that same trip, that doesn't really matter. But anyway, I was in this film museum, and the night that I went there, I had this dream that I was producing a Disney-themed fashion show, and was using sort of like the old like shadow puppet type things for projections on the walls, which was part of the film museum. And so when I woke up, I was kind of laughing at myself because I thought that it was too obvious of a theme to play with, because like the whole Disney princess, as a, you know, an alternative take on the Disney princess thing had been done before. But again, it was like I couldn't sort of avoid the thought, and it was what was popping up in my head. So I was like, all right, obviously I got to get this out somehow. How can I make it relevant to myself? And I only want to do princesses or the queens. And what if we like had them swap roles and somewhere they like dimension or they, you know, like parallel timeline jumped or something. And they, you know, the princesses were the evil queens and the evil queens were the princesses, and sort of looking at it through opposing eyes. And then I, you know, started thinking about the whole like tarot card thing and flipped meaning and integrated that. And then the idea for naming it Magic Queendom was just really obvious because Magic Kingdom is Disneyland. And
there was no drag queens.
No, there were not. I wish, I really love the idea of playing with the same theme over and over again. And American Guru is one that I would love to revisit and do over again. And also Magic Queendom is just, it's such an epic, fun theme that I would love to revisit that as well and maybe do something along those lines. Because I only ever have the time that I have, and to do a show like that, I mean, I do them really infrequently because they take so much time, and I have to actually not work on client bookings while I'm working on the show. So it took me like a month to finish all of those looks and get them together. So that's like a month off of work plus the expenses of doing it. And it's always really fun, and I traditionally haven't really engaged in doing fashion shows because the point from an industry standpoint is to get buyers, and I really work on an individual client basis. So I rely a lot on repeat business. So I don't really necessarily, it's like I'm preaching to my choir anyway, anytime I do a show. So it's really self-indulgent, but it is really fun to explore concepts that are my own through the vessel that is fashion. But yeah, yes. So, you know, when I developed that logo, it was just because I was looking at symbols and goddess imagery and all that kind of stuff, and just kind of came together that way.
I have my own assumptions, but I'm curious, Alice as the card of death.
Yeah.
Really interesting to me.
Yeah. I mean, again, like once I had the idea and I carved out the time, it was like I didn't have time to sit down and write a thesis about each thing, but that's again me working backwards, like that what I feel is backwards. It's like I pick up on things intuitively and then I'll sort it out later and be like, wow, that did make a lot more sense than I thought it would. Like it made sense on a surface level when I started comparing the princess / queen archetypes with some of the like, you know, the cards of the major arcana. It was like some things fell into place really easily, and Alice as death was just like the most obvious one to me. It's like if all of Wonderland is her near-death experience or whatever.
What do you think of the fact that while I was Googling your Transformers quintessons, and that so that they were these interdimensional judges, Mm-hmm. Now you could probably answer this again. I'm just, this is just based on my few minutes of Google research here, but it looks like they are judges, but it doesn't matter if you're innocent or guilty. The verdict is always death. I mean, you were talking about your dream of, like, basically, you know, death being the door or being.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that isn't that the perfect metaphor for life? Like, everything we do between birth and physical death is essentially just mental masturbation or art. Like, do you know what I mean?
Is there a difference, like, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you can't take anything with you when you go. So that is the final judgment. That's... Or, like, I mean, I don't know, because now, because of my dream and stuff, it's like, I don't necessarily believe that you can't take anything with you go. I kind of think that there is some sort of, like, resonance signature that maybe follows you. I don't know if that has any foundation in reality whatsoever, but just personally.
Well, the fun thing is no one knows what's going on, so you can yeah,
exactly.
say whatever you want and
it's
still,
like,
sound plausible.
Yeah, thank you. But yeah, and so that's just my, like, own personal, like, ideology building process. Is this the stuff that sticks to my bones? Is the stuff that sticks? And so that was one of them, which is kind of interesting because it put everything else into perspective, in the sense that I do feel like exercising artistic output as a practice is that much more valuable to me, because. If I am to sort of think that because all of my first ideas are my best ideas, that maybe I have lived or am living this exact same life in a parallel trajectory or whatever, that everything I do here just kind of builds on top of that and becomes sort of like everlasting in a really romantic kind of take on it. It's immortality. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, I don't think it's like totally, you know, just wishful thinking either. I mean, in studies into NDE, out-of-body experiences, these kind of things, yeah, some of them have been shown to be not synchronous with reality, but a good number have been shown where these people are saying that stuff's going on that is later corroborated that is insane. I mean, it's like 99% to the detail of, like, all this nuance that was going on around their quote-unquote dying or dead body, and it's like... How does that happen? Same thing with Philip Dick. It's one thing to dismiss a lot of what he says as saying, mm-hmm. well, okay, how do you prove any of it? And that's true. But at the same time, he came back with that with supposedly the zebra told him how to cure his son who had something. And the doctors couldn't figure it out. And Dick told him what it was. And they looked for it and found it and cured the kid. And
yeah,
I think he told him to get a hernia or something.
Yeah, hernia. There you go. Okay. So, for a kid in the development it was at, it was like possibly fatal and they didn't have any concept. So it's just, you know, shit like that that's like I permit myself to flirt with it. And I don't think you need to know that to flirt with it either. So, you know, that's why I have sympathy for like more religious people. Like, I'm not
religious. Yeah.
But I've like. I just moved from a community that was full of fundamentalists. So you had to learn how to interact with them and have fun with them without losing your mind. And how do you do that?
Yes.
Like, you know.
Exactly.
I don't agree with them on a lot, but I, you know, it's not like this idea is crazy. It's just like where they're going with it's kind of destructive.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to that, like the idea for me that it's like you kind of make your own reality. So in a way, it's like I can attach meaning to that, and whether there is subjective meaning or not doesn't really matter, because then it becomes my reality, which is dangerous because, you know, obviously people can get lost in that kind of thought. But it's like the same thing with synchronicity. Like, just because we're seeing the synchronicity in things doesn't mean that there's this like underlying message that needs to be taken from it, like in an absolute kind of way, but just the fact that it's there.
Oh, I'm doing so wrong.
Yeah. But just the fact that it is there to begin with is like interesting enough.
Absolutely. Well said.
And like, and also sort of like reinforces it. You know?
Yeah, there's a feedback. It's exactly. You notice it, then you contribute to it, and then it influences you again. It's like any piece of artwork or anything. It's like, or any conscious participation in reality, I guess, those things.
Exactly.
And if you read it all about systems theory, which is kind of dry in a sense, but also it's another way of just looking at science that isn't reductionist. And so in that sense, you know, everything influences everything. There are no separate parts. So everything's bleeding into everything, and there's interfaces for sure. But they're just membranes. They're permeable things, and there's resistance to them getting through, but they always get through one way or another.
Yes. Yeah.
That so that's how that's how consciousness works, I think, in a large sense. It's largely localized, but I mean, a lot of weird shit bleeds in, and it's like there's an interface that we don't even pay attention to.
Because it's just like that particular angle of consciousness is attaching, like all of the things that are attaching to it. Is that kind of what you mean? Like if it's a stream?
Yeah, like there's a...
It's picking up the debris along the way and like whatever sticks kind of comes out that way.
Yes, so the universe itself is just energetic. You get even dark energy, okay, that's like 70% of the universe, and it's filling up more and more and more. So energy from nothing is actually bullshit, but we can't use dark energy, we just know it's there. So anyway, I lost my train of thought, but that's okay.
I was talking about consciousness as a river collecting debris. Oh, right.
Okay. So if we think of it as a flow of energy, and if you liken that to a river, okay, when you stick a rock in a river or something, a vortex forms behind that rock. It's like a stable pattern is able to form. So if you introduce boundary conditions to a flowing system, you get structure. And so we're structure of a flow. And so that's why you have determinism and free will that go side and side. And coexist, and that they're not mutually exclusive. Like all things synchronistic, none of it's mutually exclusive. But we tend to think black and white areas, and synchronicity is all about the grays.
Yes.
People try to get away from it because they're uncomfortable.
Okay, you just said the grays. So that reminded me of my going down to the Sync Summit story.
Go for it.
Yeah, which we still never heard. Yeah, please.
Can I take a quick break?
Yeah. And then, that's fine.
Like, how will you guys call me back? Just give me, like, call me back in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. Okay. That's, all right.
Okay, bye.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
So while she's gone, I want to sort of just quickly touch base with you about what I was working on today. I did do work into... I actually did put together that other episode.
Already?
Yeah.
Okay, that was fast. I'm so fucking slow, man. Like, I'm always impressed by how quickly... And you explained it to me. You're not as meticulous as me, but... Jesus, you're fast. Way faster than me.
I've been doing this for, like, a few years. And, like, I do... And I... Yeah, it's just... Yeah. I mean, listen, it took me, since I got home basically to this call, I mean, it took me hours, but I made an image, I edited the thing, it's basically ready to go.
Just put it up. Don't worry about it. Like, I'll give you the date if you need it. I'll look it up after this. We'll put that up, and we'll put up Matt after. Matt's not, he's laid back. He doesn't give a shit. He doesn't want priority. He doesn't care when it goes up. And as long as we don't care when it goes up, I think we should do it that way instead of waiting for me. But
well,
I'll say this.
I would rather put miss. So basically, here's my one thing. It sounds stupid, and I'm not a Thelemite or anything. But it was important to me to do something really fun with episode 93.
Okay.
So, I would rather do Matt as 93, which would have been the next. Oh, hey, Matt.
Can you guys hear me? I'm back.
Yeah, we hear you.
Cool.
But
go ahead, sorry.
So it doesn't matter, we're just talking sort of technical. So just to say quickly, John, is either I'd like, if we could do Matt as 93, which would be the correct order, or we could do this with Misty as 93, but I'd...
Do me as 93.
I think we can accommodate that. I have no issue with that.
You know what?
The nonlinear spirit of this, so I think it's okay.
And that would be a perfect complement to the same thing that happened on 42 Minutes, because the conversation, like they recorded two conversations in one day. It was me and Mike Cleland. Is that his name? The guy with the owl sync stuff?
Yeah.
Which was really lovely because, like, Doug said that he was going to post-date my episode before we started. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. Like, I don't care. But it was fun because I went into my whole, like, future humans peeping in on me in my dream sometime thing. And he was like, do you know what we were talking about this morning? And I was like, no, but you should tell me. So anyway, they didn't release it in the same order either. So like that.
Can I tell you, I actually went to visit Mike Cleland. And
you did?
I did. Before I got to Olympia, I actually went camping with Mike, and that was fucking awesome, by the way. But he talked.
Did you see owls?
I didn't see a single fucking owl. I didn't get... As soon as, like, the next day, like, Will Morgan and Douglas were both like, so did you get abducted by aliens? And I'm like, no. Like, you at least saw an owl, right? And I'm like, no. But I had an awesome time. So, that's okay. I didn't need to get abducted by aliens or anything. Just to say that actually Mike lives near a big drive-in movie theater.
Jealous.
I know, and he was saying how he had gone to see the Transformers movie.
Jealous.
Like, just before I got there, like the day before I got there, or something.
In the outdoor theater.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, I take that back. Amazing. The day before I got there, he had seen the Planet of the Apes movie, but he mentioned
the one with. Oh, funny, because Marky Mark is in that too, but probably not the new one that you're talking about.
Right. Okay, so that's interesting, right? So Marky Mark was in the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes.
And yeah, I just watched on the which it was one of the films that I watched on the plane going over to Norway before I saw the Age of Extinction film. I watched. It was so funny because I was going through the catalog of films and. They had Black Swan and Fight Club, and I couldn't decide between which one to watch, so I just picked... I'm like, I don't need to sleep for a 7-hour flight. Like, I'll just watch 3 movies in a row, because that's a totally sane person thing to do. And so I ended up watching Fight Club and Black Swan back-to-back, which was hilarious, because I'm like, oh my god, it's the same movie, but it's like masculine versus feminine. It's the same sort of like split personality or like personality shattering and leading to enlightenment kind of thing. It was gorgeous. I loved the juxtaposition. But then the third movie I watched was the Marky Mark Planet of the Apes.
That's really funny.
And I was wondering if anyone had done any sync work on Mark Wahlberg, like as an actor. I don't have the patience for it, so it's not going to be me.
Yeah,
I haven't seen anything, but yeah, I find him very obnoxious, so I don't know if I can. It's that thing, it's like, oh, that bigotry where you can get into subject matter. Like, I wouldn't even get to Transformers unless you convince me.
But yeah.
He's great in fucking I Heart Huckabees.
I Heart Huckabees, I like it too, but I don't think it's a great movie or anything. The messaging is amazing. There's a lot
of John, we cannot be friends anymore.
John, we're no longer friends.
I didn't think the performances didn't inspire me, but no, I still like
the
movie.
That's not the point. Yeah, exactly.
That's not the point. I know. I there was a, like after I was on 42 minutes and I listened to myself back on the thing, I was like, my mantra was like, stop saying Transformers is a good movie out loud. Not everyone is in your head. They don't know what the hell you're talking about. Stop saying it's an objectively good movie, because it's not. Unless, of course, you have a couple hours for me to explain to you why it's good. Not many people have that pleasure. It's just
right,
you
right.
Guys.
I'm glad, yeah. Because I'll be honest, I wouldn't have even given 2 thoughts of the Transformers movies.
Well, and I don't even know that it's really like worth it. It was just the whole process of going through it and self-discovery for me, figuring out why I was so obsessed with it, was so lovely. Just to kind of see like the inspiration and like the same kind of messages that were coming through the movie or also in other things. Like, I'm sure you guys know, I don't know,
You don't have to apologize.
You don't have to watch the movie to get like what the message is. Like, I'm sure you can get that message from other more meaningful things. It was just me as a personal trip. It was fun, you know.
Or everyone has their own weird, not good thing, but thing that speaks to them.
Yeah, you know? It's my guilty pleasure. Transformers is my guilty pleasure.
Hey man, there's a guy who made the movie Beastmaster. Don Cascarelli made this cheesy horror movie called Phantasm, which I think is a sink gold mine, you know? No, I don't expect anyone else to go out and watch that. And there's a few, like, anime like series that I've tried to get people to watch and no one will watch them with me, but they are incredible. And it's like, and then I just realized, it's okay. You know, everyone, if for you it's Transformers, for me it's a different cheesy cartoon, for somebody else it's whatever, that's okay. Like, that's the whole point of personal sync, is
exactly.
You'll find the same thing and the thing that's valuable to you in whatever speaks to you.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's not just your friends being like, I'm excited, you're excited.
Right.
But it's like, it's actually people being like, I'm excited, you're excited, because I also have that guilty pleasure experience in finding and unlocking clues, which is what's so much fun about like actually engaging with you guys and being able to talk in this way. And what I find so valuable about your both your, I mean, 42 minutes and Always Record as a podcast, it's like, it's great and totally valuable. I love it.
Yeah, 42 minutes is all right. It's no Always Record, but it's okay.
42 minutes was my first love. So.
Yeah, if mine too. No, and I think Doug and Will, but I mean, Doug has done such wonders with that show, and I'm so impressed with them, and I have nothing but tons and tons of love for them. So.
And the people they seek out is really impressive too. The list of people,
a lot
of people don't get exposure, so they seek those people out, which is impressive.
Doug, you know I love you. I'm just busting your balls. If you're listening,
we hope somebody will listen. And even if no one listens, it's still valuable.
That's completely, completely true. Yeah. I have a feeling that there's always someone listening. I was that person for a long time that was just listening, that never spoke out or said anything.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, like David mentioned this the last time we talked. He's like, you know, you put something out there, you don't know, you know, who's going to stumble across it or how it's going to affect this, you know, interaction or situation or what. And it's just fun to contemplate, even if you don't even know the fruits of your own labor. Which I think we'll never know.
And as part of the artistic process, you can't, like the nature of it is that you can't think end results, like, or question that. Otherwise, it kind of stops you dead. You're questioning yourself. You got to just go with it.
Yeah. You know, I have a minor history in gambling, and a lot of the approach to that is, it's thinking along those lines. You know, it has to be a process, and it can't be results oriented, because you have to take like a good gamble, or you have to take something that feels right to you, you know, and it's based on factors, and you take all the elements in as best you can and make the most informed decision.
It's a long game.
So that the process are the same. That's what you should focus is like, is my process correct? Is like my train of thought correct? Is like the way I approach problems and complexity correct? And I don't know. If you see the more you anyway. I'll leave it at that.
Okay, so you were talking about gray areas, and then that reminded me of grays and my Sync Summit synchronicity. So one of the things, so I went back after, like the day before coming down to Olympia, I listened to that episode, the 42 minutes with Mike Cleland, because Doug had mentioned it, and like hadn't thought twice about the owl thing. Like, I don't remember owls ever being significant in my life whatsoever. But the interesting thing is that when I first got into synchronicity and I was playing around with the different ways in which you guys were talking about like manipulating things, like anagrams are definitely one of them. Well, my given name is Misty Greer. A lot of people think it's like a stage name because I'm related to the burlesque community, but that is my actual name. And the anagram that I use on Twitter is just Mr. Gray. So I thought like that was just kind of funny because I was talking about the future human things, and then Doug was telling me that Mike was talking about how aliens are possible, just like future humans or whatever. So I'm listening to the episode and I'm like, that's really interesting. I don't ever remember like any particular owl sinks or anything. But the very next morning, of course, heading down to Olympia, we stop at this bakery in like outside Seattle for breakfast. And I like the second we get in the door, it was like all of a sudden I had that like old familiar feeling that things were getting sinky and weird. And so I turned to the right and the entire wall space is taken up by like paintings, like an artist's work on display. And there's two major ones that are occupying the majority of the space. So on the left, there's this sort of surrealist horse that is like bursting through blackness on sort of like light, like out through some light. And the horse is like, it's painted in a surrealistic style in kind of like red and blue brush strokes. So it kind of looks a little bit like a zebra in a very sort of like foreshadowing of everything that was going on at the Sync Summit, where there was a lot of like zebra talk and Valis and like horses in particular. I know Will Morgan talked a bit about it, and so did Violator in his wrap-up of the Sync Summit. But anyway, directly to the right of the horse was this giant owl, like with piercing yellow eyes, just kind of staring out. And I was like, of course I see an owl right after listening to the owl episode of 42 Minutes. And the really beautiful thing to kind of like tie it all together is like a personal, just kind of like a personal sinky moment was there was this tiny little painting in the middle, or two actually. One was like another little horse, and then the one right below it was like a waterfall. And my middle name is Lynn, like L-Y-N-N, and the meaning is actually like waterfall. So I was like, this is very cool, like looking in a mirror. And when I was looking at the horse, I was thinking like Matrix horse pill kind of tie-in things with the red and the blue and all that kind of stuff. But then, so we're driving down on, and I was like, I'm not going to think too much of the owl thing because I know that I'm very impressionable. So, like, I just know that about myself. So if it sticks out in any other way, then I'll maybe like think about it. So we're driving down to Olympia, and like right as I look out my window to the right, this big Mack truck is going by, and on the trailer, it's like all white. And then in green, like dark green writing, it was like E, capital letter E dot T, capital T. And then something like terraforming or something. And I was like, oh, owl and ET. Okay. That's another little sink. And
is the truck Optimus Prime?
I hope so. I think so. I know he's out there somewhere. Actually, I think I already stumbled upon him. I took a picture on the blog post for my Norway episode where it was like this red and blue truck that had a hound of enlightenment painted on the side of it. It's like this green hound war dog looking type thing, but its third eye is a happy face. And up in the upper right hand corner, it says more beers, less tears, which I just think is like almost as good as transform and roll out as a personal motto. So I was like, Optimus, is that you? So anyway, so the ET truck, and I was like, all right, that's two, but I'm still not going to think much of it. That's okay. And so we get to Olympia, and it's like everything was really sort of just lovely and dreamy. Like we left the hotel to come to the meet and greet at the bookstore. And as we're walking by, it's like Olympia has such a cool feel to it. It's like a very cool sort of like little slice of time, it kind of feels like. So we're walking, and there's just like a bunch of people on the street, and one homeless guy is sort of like, has these two flags in his hand, is just like raving at the top of his lungs, like, there's no color in this city, like it's lifeless, everything is dead. And like we're walking directly towards him as he's shouting this, and I'm just thinking like, that's so I don't know. That's so interesting because here I am brought here to this city because of like the life force and energy that is the Sync community and like fearing that I would miss out on being a part of that. So I was there for the exact opposite reason that this guy is like ranting about, saying that there's no life here. We need to bring life back. And right as I pass him, he turns me and stares me in the eye and just yells, "Color!" like at the top of his lungs. And I was like, ah, yeah, color. I get it, dude. That's cool. So that was like just really weird and surreal. And meeting everyone was lovely, but we went back to the hotel before going to Radio A-Ball. And as we were walking back, the only people that we saw on the sidewalk were this family, and this guy was sort of trying to like corral his kids. So I went to go walk around him, but he stood up and turned towards me, and he was wearing a Steven Spielberg E.T. shirt.
No, no, okay.
And I was like, what? All right, that's three. That's kind of awesome. Three E.T., Mr. Gray, owl, UFO things going on. And then sure enough, on Saturday, I was sitting and like listening to the presentations and stuff, I kind of like, I think it was like right after Marty Leeds' presentation, I kind of like took a breath and my eyes like fell down to the left, and James Evan Pilato just was like sitting next to me and kind of put down his water bottle. And as he put it down, the sticker was facing me and it was an owl carrying like records under his arm that said like Night Owl Records or whatever. And I laughed out loud and he kind of just looked at me like, what? What's wrong? And I was like, tell me everything you know about that sticker on your water bottle, mister. And he's like, oh, it's just an old record company, something or other. I'm like, okay, that's cool. Never mind me. I'm just having my own little like Sync World things.
Yeah. When you kind of have to stop somebody and say, what is that symbol? It's really significant for me right now. And
mm-hmm.
It's always good for a laugh, if nothing else. Because they're never going to give you, more often than not, they're not going to give you the answer you're hoping for of, oh, actually, it's the symbol of this secret society that we were just hoping that you would notice it. Come, please, you've made it. Now step behind the curtain and...
Yeah, it was kind of lovely. And so I like, you know, for me personally, I try not to attach too much meaning to things. So like, I joked with Doug when he mentioned that on the show. And I was joking when I said, are you trying to tell me that I'm being abducted by aliens in my dreams? And he was like, no, I would never do that to someone. It's weird. that's a horrible thought to put in someone's brain. So, you know, it's like it. On one hand, it didn't really surprise me, but I also thought it was kind of lovely because my name is an anagram for Mr. Gray, after all. So, of course, I'm, like, attracted to all these kind of interdimensional, extraterrestrial ideas. I don't know if it's reality.
Oh, two funny little things. Like, my old screen name used to have Gray in it. I shortened it, but it used to have Gray in it for a long, long, long time. And there was something else, fuck it. But anyway, that's just a cute little thing. Oh, and the name of my blog is actually Q-Universe.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I know. So I found your blog in the middle of researching all my Q stuff before I found the Terrence McKenna lectures. I told you that in the email I sent you. It was like when I saw your blog and then looked in the about section and defined
yeah.
something as
right
like,
what the Q means and stuff, and it really comes back to what we're talking about, which I didn't think I didn't understand what you were getting at, but now it's, you know, even more connected in my mind. And so like what my blog, the name is devoted to, is Q, which is quantum potential, which is like this primordial stuff that everything comes out of, which is the quintessence, which
right.
you know, we're transformers of the quintessence, kind of.
So now, you know, like, yeah, going back to Star Trek, because it was like, when I had that thought, one of the first things I wanted to do was sit down and just watch only the episodes that Q is actually in, because that's the main storyline of the show anyway. And in the very first 10 minutes, like, I had read your, like, pilot wave, Q is the pilot wave kind of thing. In the very first 10 minutes, like, of the show, when Q appears to Picard the very first time, he appears as a pilot and he says to him, I'm only taking this form because it's how you can relate to me. And I was like,
yeah,
I mean, that's like, is that the writers being that knowledgeable and knowing all of those things, or is
no
it something
way
that's just being, you don't think so? See,
I
would
not
my,
for something like that.
My instinct would be to give them credit and just be like, well, it is a sci-fi show, so I would assume that they would know a few things.
And
like,
that's
maybe
not
they
wrong.
Were
and I'm not going to say you're wrong because I don't know. And, but it strikes me as not, it doesn't strike me as being written in there, because what that is, I don't know, it's really obscure. Even in like the scientific community, like the hardcore quantum physics community, not everyone's even familiar with that idea, but it's like, well vetted. So it's the obscurity that challenges my mind in that sense, not that they wouldn't know quantum physics, if that makes
right.
sense.
Right.
But
yeah,
that's just interpretation of quantum physics that not everybody knows. And if they knew that, you know, kudos to them. But it's like,
right.
I don't know. I think that's just like an idea that resonates with this idea of this all-pervasive plenum, or like, you know, space-time vacuum, or whatever we call it, or quintessence. And that's just bleeding through into their mind. So it's like, you know, is it conspiracy or is it synchronicity?
It's just,
you know?
Well, it's just them being, I mean, as art, like, again, as artists, when you do something as profound as like writing Star Trek, which has become this huge cultural like pop icon thing that touches so many people and resonates with so many people, it's like it's an act of empathy. So, you know what I mean? It's like you as artists, I think you're like already vibrating on a really empathetic level. So, yeah, maybe information like that just kind of seeps out in that way that we were kind of talking about before.
Yeah.
Like consciousness sort of finding its way with different masks and different heads and in science and in art and in storytelling and all these things, which is why we as observers are now seeing the connection between all those things in a really uncanny kind of way.
Yeah.
But it's hard to not be like, yeah, they must have done their research. I mean, even Terrence McKenna mentioned Star Trek and was like, it wouldn't surprise me if they did DMT, because a lot of the idea of Q as an interdimensional being, the quintessence and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting. And I kind of tried to do a little bit of research just to the point of looking and seeing if there was any overlap between the writers of Star Trek Next Generation and the original Transformers series, because the Transformers series came out first, like just a few years, I think, like 4 or 5 years before Next Generation started in the late 80s. So I was like, I wonder, I mean, at the time, like science fiction writers, maybe there would be overlap, but I couldn't find anyone that connected the two.
Well, my friend Matt thinks along similar lines as you, and he thinks that they had some kind of knowledge, and actually he comes out of that, the ray guns, he has like a theory about the ray guns and whatnot, and like the type of beam that they shoot out is reminiscent of like certain physics that he's involved in, that he says, you know, is interesting to observe. And so he doesn't know where to draw the line there. He thinks, he tends to have a more intentional bent on things, which is fine, but I mean, we've had him on and he's well read in synchronicity and whatnot, but you know, we all come down on different positions on different things, and a lot of the time it's that idea of complementarity, which is the complex saying that, like, you know, things aren't mutually exclusive, two opposites can be going on at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also really like the idea of, like, you know, when we talk about gray areas and then that like be mirrored in paranormal sci-fi stuff, but like gray area for me, I always think about the sort of like yin yang context of like that bleed through line, like between the black and the white there is gray, like there has to be gray somewhere there.
Well, that you can think of, like, yeah,
like,
go ahead, Alan.
The all-encompassing context of everything is a gray line or a gray area.
What very few people, I don't know if I've ever said this publicly or whatever, but what I wanted to call, like, you know, okay, so we did the sync book, and then Doug was like, we should have a publishing company, and we did all this sort of stuff, and what I wanted to call it was Shades of Gray, because for me, the whole point was to have this middle ground, and just as I was working on a logo and everything, and then those fucking books, the mommy porn books came out,
yeah.
I was like, all right, never mind. Pick another title. Like, that's gone. That's taken. But it's funny is that, like, it definitely, to me, that's sync, right? It's like, here I am thinking, like, this is exactly what I want to convey. Like, is that like not just the mid? Is that like this or that or a middle ground? It's an entire spectrum.
Yeah.
And you know, and hey, if that's, you know, if people are able to take that into their sexuality, cool. You know, it's like it's not. You know, obviously, I was a little disappointed that that was taken, but you know, like, at the same time, it's like just to have something sort of reach the zeitgeist at that moment that, at least in some way, spoke to that was kind of neat.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, navigating the gray waters is like the heart of essentially what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Like in bringing together, you know. Yeah, in the struggle in communication, in not being like morally absolutist about things, like that's, we are in the choppy gray waters. That's where we are.
There's a concept in chemical morphogenesis, or the development of bodies from embryos and whatnot. And you know what? Fuck it. I'm like really tired. I'm kind of burned out, so I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. But we'll save it for another time. But,
okay.
I just want to say real quick so I've been making an image for this episode while we've been talking, right? And there came a point where I had made this thing, and I was like, is there not enough color in this? It's very gray, right? And I was like, there's something, you know, there's like, there are some splashes of color, I was like, but it's very gray. And I was like, does this need more color? Because you have a very colorful personality. But then hearing your story about the guy in Olympia.
With the color, more color.
More color, but then also just the fact that, yeah, but the, you know, the gray is a sort of color. It's a symbolic color, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it feels right.
The
so.
Symbology of, yeah, I mean, the symbolic nature of gray is more powerful, I think.
Yeah.
I like it. I give you permission to stick with gray.
Well, I'll send you the image later, tell me what you think. So.
Well,
I'm sure
you know,
we'll approve.
Is it okay if we start wrapping up a little bit? Or
of course,
if not, I mean,
yeah.
If you guys want to keep talking, I mean, I don't have to be
Good.
Or anything, but I'd like to know, like, you know, maybe what you're working on, like what we can expect. Are you going to keep writing on your blog, and like what should we pay attention to for what you're doing?
Yeah, I'll definitely still write on my blog. I'm going to do a Sync Summit wrap up, just kind of talk about all the things we just talked about now. And I would like to do a piece on my like quintessent sort of strain of thought. So those two things, hopefully soon. And I kind of have an idea for a fashion show, but it's going to be like distant future because I just did Magic Queendom this year. And like I said, I can't really afford or take the time to do it more than once a year. So the whole Transformers mythos really lends itself to me to do something physical with. So I'd love to go full nerd and do a Transformers inspired collection. So that probably in the future. But other than that, I'm just going to be here working, listening to you guys.
Well, that's cool.
It.
Yeah. I
exploring.
Mean, I think we'd definitely like to have you back on in the future whenever you can spare the time in between your, you know.
Are you kidding me? Anytime. I would love to come back and be on the show with you guys again.
Yeah. Can I ask, did you and David find a time to actually talk about Lady Gaga and Machine Women? I hope at some point over the weekend.
No, you know, it went by so fast. There was so much to talk about. And David and I bonded over Marilyn Manson to begin with.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Because, the other really awesome sinky thing was that the very first, like when we went to the bar for Radio 8 Ball, the very first place I plopped myself down in front of in direct eye line across the bar for me was the Autobot symbol on the little cooler. And I was like, of course I picked the seat that I'm sitting right in front of the Autobot logo for Transformers. Anyway, so I was sitting there and I was wearing my Marilyn Manson shirt and David sort of walked by and was like, Twiggy. And I was like, yeah, Manson. So we chatted about that, but we didn't even get into Lady Gaga stuff. And a lot of the time, there was so much talk of like Crowley and Kabbalah and stuff going on, which I don't have like an extensive knowledge base on. So I was sort of just sitting around listening, being a fly on the wall, like gobsmacked by the amount of sort of knowledge that everyone had surrounding those subjects, which was really, really interesting. And like I said, I came away with a lot of notes and stuff, but no, we didn't really have a bunch of time to sit down and talk one-on-one. I was sad that he wasn't here, but I mean, like I said, if you guys are going to have me on again, then there's plenty of time to talk about all of the things.
Yeah, we'd love to have you back anytime. It's a real, real pleasure.
Aw, the pleasure is absolutely mine.
All right, so let me look at this image. Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yay!
Yeah, that's really good.
Oh, wait, did you just send it? I want to look.
It's in the Skype chat, yeah.
Okay, I'm looking. Oh, I approve. Very much approve. Oh, it's RC. I love it. Yes, it's fantastic.
So, yeah, I guess we'll let you know when the episode's posted and stuff. And, well, you're on Facebook and stuff. I think we put it up there the day we post it. So, but we can tell you when it's up if you want.
Fantastic. John, it was such a pleasure meeting you. And, Alan, it was great reconnecting with you.
Yeah, same here. And I really, like I said, I'm just glad that we got to do this again because I felt like it was a missed opportunity in Olympia. So
yeah, awesome. This has been really great. So we'll talk again soon. We'll obviously stay in touch and have a great night.
Okay, thanks, guys. Sweet dreams.
Good night, guys. Thanks.
All right,
bye.